You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered, listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting for WFHB, this is Jim Odom.
And I'm Annika Harshberger. This is the WFHB local news for Tuesday, March 19th, 2024.
Later in the program, WFHB environmental correspondent Robert Schull speaks with environmental advocate Marsha Veldman, founder of the South Central Indiana chapter of Citizens Climate Lobby. More in today's feature report.
Also, coming up in the next half hour, we have Lil Bub's Lil Show, a co-production of WFHB and Lil Bub's Big Fund. But first, your local headlines.
At the Ellettsville Town Council meeting on March 11th, Town Attorney Darla Brown explained the water rate approval the town received from the Indiana Regulatory Committee. The rate the town requested was not approved, but a slight increase in rates was approved by the committee.
As you are aware, the town petitioned the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission for an increase in the water rates. The IURC back in February, I believe it was the 9th or the 7th of February, approved the rates. But they did not approve the rates that the town had requested. The rates that were approved were slightly lower. So this ordinance is the rates that were actually approved. And I believe that these have been posted on the town's website since the last meeting.
Town Manager Mike Farmer explained that this is phase one of the water rate increase. He walked through some examples of what their average customer's bill will look like.
I wanted to mention that this is phase one of the rate increase. Phase two will be implemented once we start the construction of the new Department of Public Works building, and that will phase in, and then we'll add an additional 8.5% to the bill. Just so everybody wonders what kind of raise it is dollar-wise, current rates are $18.72 for water minimum bill. The approved rate will be $23.94. And if everybody's used to just looking at their bill with water and sewer on it, it'll raise the old bill with water and sewer on it and storm from $58.97 to $64.96. That includes storm water and sewer. So a 4,500-gallon user, which is the average for our customers, a current rate is $27.30, and the approved rate will be $34.97 for water.
The council unanimously approved the water rate increase. Next, the council discussed funding for rural transit. Monroe County Council member Trent Deckard spoke to the town council, asking them to approve the continuation of funding for the service.
I'm Trent Deckard, Monroe County Council at-large member, here on behalf of the Monroe County Council and our ongoing efforts for funding for rural transit dollars. As you recall, last year we were here before you, and I'm grateful that you're considering the remaining portion that the town might be able to apply to this effort that we've been talking about for some time. I'm not going to speak specifically to numbers. I think Chris has got that. She can talk about that and address that. What I can tell you this is that in this ongoing discussion, to make sure that we're taking care of all the residents in the community and the mobility issues that they have, the county on our end, due to this change in how the state has interpreted federal rules towards rural transit, the county has come forward with $88,000 to continue rural transit in these affected areas that we've talked about for some time. You have committed through the first 3 months of the year, and I apologize if I'm telling you what you already know, but I think it's important to not only mention that, but celebrate that. Thank you for doing that. but there's still an amount that is uncertain for the patrons of this community that I represent alongside you, our mutual constituents. And so I'm here just as one member of the area to make an impassioned plea that the town consider the remaining year and funding that year. Specifically, I would just add to this conversation some things that have probably been said a million times before, but I think are incredibly important.
Monroe County Commissioner Julie Thomas implored the council to assist with funding, even if the budget is tight.
I'm so glad this is on your agenda. I believe it's past time to make sure that we provide this transit option for folks in our community. These are people who need to get to the doctor, who need to get to the pharmacy, who need to get to the grocery store, and have no other way of doing it. Rural transit will be here no matter what, but whether or not they can serve your residents in Ellettsville is in question. And that is our biggest concern. That is our biggest concern because, of course, they are Monroe County residents, and we want to do what we can to help them.
Area 10 Agency on Aging Executive Director Chris Myers outlined the cost of running the service in Ellettsville until the end of 2024.
I want to give you an update from January and February trips because I like to talk logistics here. So you'll remember that when we talked about the need for Ellettsville's contribution for the full cost parallel service for 2024, we looked at 8,000 trips for the whole area, 4,800 that would be urban to urban for Ellettsville. And so that amount was for that particular amount of trips. Based on January and February so far, when you subtract the fares, we have about $20,000 left after February's trips. So I think that's going to buy us into April for sure, which is good news for this particular conversation. But I also want to say, you know, January and February typically are lower usage months. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to carry forward to an average of the rest of the year. If we did have trips average about 260 per month for the rest of the year instead of 400. We're looking at really a total of just about $43,000 more needed to cover Ellettsville between now and the end of 2024 to, like Julie said, buy us time to come up with that long-term solution that we know we need to have.
During public comment, many Ellettsville residents shared how they rely on rural transit. Ellettsville resident Mary Hayek said she lives outside of the limits of Bloomington Transportation Services and explained that she would lose her independence if she lost access to rural transit. Councilmember Dan Swafford said that this decision is one of the most important he has ever made during his time on council and asked his fellow council members to approve its funding.
I've been on the council 20 years, and I really think this is one of the most important decisions that I've had to make. I know that things that I've done on this council affects a lot of people here, like police officers, firemen, the street people, but this personally affects you guys out there, and there's a lot more out there that couldn't make it tonight. So I would plead with the rest of my council to at least fund this the rest of the year until we can come up for permanent funding for from then on out. So hang in there, guys. We can do this.
Council member William Ellis said that he was hopeful funding for the service could come from EDLIT revenue. Council member Scott Oldham said that it is difficult because the town has never run a bus service and doesn't have a budget for it. The council voted to amend their memorandum of understanding with Rural Transit to extend their services until the money they have already set aside is depleted. Oldham said they will revisit how to fund it further after they receive firm numbers on what they expect to receive from the Economic Development Local Income Tax. The council will revisit their funding strategy at the next meeting. The Ellettsville Town Council will meet again on March 25th.
In today's feature report, WFHB environmental correspondent Robert Schull speaks with environmental advocate Marcia Veldman, founder of the South Central Indiana chapter of Citizens Climate Lobby, the state's first CCL chapter, Veldman discusses her activism, her background, and how to best respond to the climate crisis. She also touches on a legislative effort to expand the boundaries of the Charles C. Deem Wilderness Area. This interview will be broadcast on Eco Report, our environmental affairs program, airing each Friday at 5 p.m. on WFHB. We turn now to that interview.
Today, I'm talking with Marcia Veldman, who I regard as one of today's climate change heroes. Thanks for coming in to share your concerns, Marcia.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
And before we get into the nitty-gritty and the challenges of climate change, let's talk about who you are and how you got here. Are you a Hoosier?
I am. I grew up in South Bend, Indiana, and have spent most of my life in Indiana. I did live in California on and off for 8 years as well.
And you come from a large family?
I do. Both of my parents immigrated from the Netherlands, and they came from really large families, from family farms in the Netherlands, and went on to have large family. So yes, there were seven of us kids.
All right. Now, you are an active member of a Bloomington church that has a number of task forces, Habitat Task Force, Rainbow Rights Task Force, Hunger and Homelessness Task Force, and it goes on and on. You are most involved with the Green Sanctuary Task Force. What is that?
So it's a task force that is focused on combating climate change. Our full title is the Green Sanctuary Task Force on Global Climate Change. And our kind of joke is we are a task force because soon as we get the job done, we'll disband. We may have a few years ahead of us.
Okay. And why is this task force important to you?
I feel that dealing with climate change is the moral imperative of our time. I just find it so sad and wrong that right now the people who are having to deal with climate change are generally the people who have the least ability to do so, like, you know, in low-lying island countries or in East Africa where people are primarily dependent on the natural resources and growing food for their own countries and are having a hard time because of climate change.
All right. Well, your focus, however, what I know about the task force is local. Do you have any examples of success stories?
Well, right now we have a program going that's called Task of the Month. And each month we put out a plan for things that you can do. Generally, it's in your home. Last month in February, it was eating green and provided suggestions on how to lower the carbon footprint or the carbon emissions associated with the foods that you eat.
Now, wait a minute. Are you talking about kale smoothies?
Well, kale smoothies are a good thing as far as I'm concerned, but it can be, you know, if you typically eat, you know, a lot of red meat, which actually does have a pretty heavy carbon footprint, decreasing that. You know, I think eating in particular is such a personal choice, but I think having the information on how what you're eating impacts the climate then can help people make decisions about their own personal choice.
Well, you do occasionally have a pitch in to get together for some of your meetings, don't you?
Yeah, we do. And it's always vegetarian because that we, you know, working to live out our values, although certainly Not everyone in our group's vegetarian, and that is perfectly fine. Everybody needs to figure out how best they can address climate change in their own lives and through advocacy.
So you don't sit around in a circle like an AA meeting and say, I ate a hamburger.
Absolutely not. We work to be guilt-free.
All right, so there's a social element to the task force then.
Yeah, there sure is. We really get to know each other, get to support each other in a variety of different ways. And, you know, several of our members are also engaged with other organizations. So there's also this kind of networking and support of other organizations that takes place through the Green Sanctuary.
And about how many people are involved actively with the task force?
We have about a dozen active members and then quite a few people who, like if we put out an action alert, they'll take action.
An action alert such as?
Oh, the probably most recent one, something that we and I personally have been focusing on quite a bit is encouraging people to write their members of Congress, especially Representative Houchin, around the expansion of the Deem Wilderness proposal that Senator Braun has put forth as a bill in the Senate.
And so you're trying to encourage other representatives to support that effort.
Yes. And here in District 9, where the Deem Wilderness lies within the Hoosier National Forest, Representative Houchin is the person whose district would be most impacted. And so, you know, it's very important for her to bring forth a companion bill in the House that is similar to what Senator Braun has put forth in the Senate.
What's the status of this then?
The status is that, yeah, Braun has put it forward. One recent, I feel like, important victory is my representative in the House, which is Representative Hall. He has endorsed the bill, and he represents the entirety of the proposal of this project, which is all in Hoosier National Forest, and has said he's heard nothing but good. So he's actively encouraging it as well. But
well, how many people do you think you nudged into contacting their representative on this?
Well, through the Green Sanctuary and Citizens Climate Lobby and Green Drinks, which I guess we'll get to later, I would guess there have been hundreds and hundreds of emails and postcards and other phone calls.
Well, how big a list does the Green Sanctuary Task Force have?
We have about 100 people on our list, and then we also can communicate with our entire congregation through the congregational newsletter.
You're also active in the Citizens Climate Lobby and the Green Drinks. Green Drinks, that's it.
Green Drinks Bloomington.
Okay. Tell us a bit about the Citizens Climate Lobby. What is that?
All right. Well, it ties in nicely with Green Sanctuary in that in ways it was kind of born out of the Green Sanctuary Task Force. We were really focused on, you know, our congregation in this community and felt like we had done a lot of work. And then someone reached out to us to talk about this organization called Citizens Climate Lobby. And it's a nonpartisan nonprofit that works primarily in the U.S., but it is an international organization. It's grassroots, and it primarily works on the federal level, working to get significant climate-related bills enacted into law.
All right. So the recent law that you were describing that the Green Sanctuary Task Force was involved in. Was that a joint effort with the Citizens Climate Lobby as well?
So as far as the Deem Wilderness Expansion Bill that Senator Braun has put out, that is something that both Citizens Climate Lobby Indiana and the Green Sanctuary Task Force have been working to move it forward so it does get enacted into law.
How would you say, how optimistic are you that the Citizens Climate Lobby is or can be effective?
I'm very optimistic about that. I've been volunteering with them for 10 years now. I've probably been to D.C. about that many times.
Whoa.
Yeah, we have a June conference that takes place in D.C. and it's followed by a lobby day. And so, you know, over the years have met with so many members of Congress and their staff. And
can you zero in on a particular success story?
Absolutely. The Inflation Reduction Act that was passed, I think that was the beginning of 23. And that is the single most significant climate change bill passed anywhere. And Citizens Climate Lobby, we worked on it for a year. We had about 250,000 contacts. Now, this is nationally, not Indiana, right. But we had about 250,000 contacts with our members of Congress, whether it was phone calls, lobby meetings, right. Emails.
But you've been there to their offices, gone in and talked to them face to face?
Yes, many times.
That must be energizing. Pretty heady stuff there.
It is. There's something special about walking through the halls of Congress and thinking about what all has taken place over the many, many decades of this country. And it also is very empowering to know how important it is for us as citizens to engage in our government.
Right. So, Marcia, you belong to another organization, Green Drinks. Is that another local thing here?
So, Green Drinks is an international organization, or I think they might call themselves a non-organization because it's really informal. But we have a Green Drinks here in Bloomington, and it's very fun. It's a kind of a social networking activity for people interested in sustainability, climate change, and we meet once a month at the Upland Wood Shop, and generally we have a speaker who talks for about 20 minutes and then have some questions. And then because we want to really encourage the connecting aspect of this, we have 10 30-second announcements. So people just get up and share what it is they're working on, what they want to encourage people to get involved in. And so it gives people the opportunity to see and learn more about what's going on in the community.
Okay, I'm getting a feeling for the Green Drinks. It's more of a networking organization, bringing people with similar concerns together.
Absolutely, that's right.
Well, I wish we had more time to go into all three of those. That's all we're going to have time for today, but for that one listener and maybe two listeners out there that wants to get more involved but not sure how, I leave you with the following websites. First one that can lead you to the Green Sanctuary Task Force is uubloomington.org. Then click on the Justice tab. The second one is citizensclimatelobby.org. And Marcia, I don't have a URL for Green Drinks. Do you have one off the top of your head?
I believe it's greendrinks.org.
That's probably a very good guess. Marcia, it's been a pleasure talking with you. I appreciate your time. You're taking the time to come in and let people know that hand-wringing is not the most effective way to join in the struggle for survival. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Robert. This has been great.
Up next, we have Lil Bubs Lil Show, a co-production of WFHB and Lil Bubs Big Fund. We turn now to that segment on the WFHB local news.
Welcome to Lil Bubs Lil Show, a weekly co-production from WFHB and Lil Bubs Big Fund. We highlight adoptable animals with special needs in South Central Indiana and spotlight topics to promote human-animal welfare. Today, we're tackling a topic that touches the lives of our feline friends and their human families, declawing. It's a subject that demands our attention, not just for the well-being of our cats, but also to foster understanding and compassion in how we care for them. Declawing is a procedure that involves the removal of the last bone of each toe on a cat's paw. It's comparable to amputating a human finger at the last knuckle. This surgery, which can be performed using various methods, including a scalpel, guillotine clipper, or laser, is not just a simple trim. It's an amputation that can lead to lasting physical and behavioral issues for cats. But why is declawing seen as problematic? Beyond the immediate pain and potential for surgical complications like infection or tissue necrosis, declawing can alter a cat's natural behavior and physical health. It can lead to back pain, difficulty using the litter box, and even an increased likelihood of biting as the cat loses its primary means of defense. Across the globe, many countries have recognized the harm of declawing, banning the practice and labeling it as unethical. Here in the U.S., states like New York, Maryland, and the District of Columbia, along with several cities, have taken steps to prohibit declawing, reflecting a growing acknowledgement of its impact on animal welfare. Cats scratch for many reasons. It's a natural behavior that helps them stretch, maintain their claw health, and mark their territory. It's important to understand that scratching isn't about causing destruction. It's about meeting their own physical and psychological needs. So what can cat owners do to manage scratching without resorting to declawing? The answer lies in providing appropriate outlets for this behavior. Investing in tall, sturdy scratching posts made of materials like wood or corrugated cardboard can satisfy your cat's scratching instincts. Remember, every cat has its own preferences, so offering a variety of scratching surfaces is key to finding what works best for your companion animal. Moreover, simple strategies like keeping your cat's claws trimmed, using soft plastic nail caps, and covering undesirable scratching targets can help protect both your cat and your home without causing harm. Encouraging use of these alternatives with positive reinforcement, like treats or praise, can also make a big difference. Our message today is one of understanding and kindness. Declawing is never the solution to scratching. And with the right approach, you can meet your cat's needs while keeping your home intact. Let's choose methods that respect cats' natural behaviors and ensure their well-being.
And now, in the spirit of Bub, it's time to shine a spotlight on a special needs pet who's looking for their forever home. We've highlighted him before and can't believe he's still waiting for someone to bring him home. His name is Bubby. He's 15 years old, and this is what our shelter staff has to say about him. Bubby is an amazing, affectionate, gorgeous old man. He loves chin scratches and will drool the tiniest bit when he's really feeling them. His foster family is in love, and we know that you will be too. If you're looking for a senior guy who needs a warm bed to rest those weary bones, Bubby is your dude. He is diabetic and will need insulin and monitoring for this condition. If you're interested in giving Bubby the loving home he deserves, please reach out to our local Bloomington, Indiana shelter today. Remember, every pet deserves a chance at happiness, regardless of their abilities.
Thank you for tuning in to Lil Bubs Lil Show on WFHB, produced in partnership with Lil Bubs Big Fund. Find us online at goodjobbub.org and WFHB.org.